Live from the Auction Community Studios, we are the Burns and Gambo Show. Jordan Bird filling in for Gambo on this Friday going into the Memorial Day weekend. This morning on ProBasketballTalk.com, they asked one of their college basketball writers to do a scouting report, very extensive scouting report, on DeAndre Ayton, possibly the number one pick overall in the draft by the Phoenix Suns, of course, the U of A product. And it was quite a read in that it painted a picture of DeAndre Ayton. If he works as hard as he possibly can, if he gives as much effort as he possibly can, and I'm going to read this verbatim from the scouting report that I read this morning on ProBasketballTalk.com. If he does, I don't think it's out of the question to say that he could end up being a Hall of Famer, maybe one of the 15 or 20 greatest to play the game. Imagine Embiid without limits on his minutes or the number of games that he is allowed to play. The flip side to that is the effort that he gives and whether he truly wants to be a center. And the author of this article writes, I think it's pretty clear he didn't want to be great on the defensive end of the floor as a freshman or as a high schooler. And he concludes, in my mind, there's a higher than you would like chance that Ayton ends up being closer to his floor than his ceiling.
I don't know about the floor-ceiling comparison. I mean, it's hard to look at this now as we're still a month away from the draft and really say, okay, I mean, is he going to be David Robinson with a jump shot, or is he going to be, you know, the next bust in the top of the NBA draft? The thing, though, that is starting to hammer home the point with me, we have never had a Suns draft pick, and maybe you want to extend it to all the teams in the Valley, but we've never had a Suns draft pick that has had this high of expectations coming into his team. I mean, think about it. Even when we've had high picks like Dragan Bender or Alex Len, there wasn't the talk that this guy's going to be a future Hall of Famer.
No.
That this guy's going to be one of the 10, 15, 20 greatest players ever to play.
No.
So with all this being said, and we're still a month away, can DeAndre Ayton actually live up to this height?
Well, that's a great question.
Because anything less now of this will be looked at as a disappointment. Well, if he's not David Robinson with a jump shot, then we're going to say, well, then he's a bust.
What the hell? I thought you told me he was going to be David Robinson with a jump shot. I mean, yeah, and that does become kind of the problem when you start projecting like this. It becomes unrealistic to think. Now do I think he is going to be one of the 15 or 20 greatest to ever play the game? Man, that's an awful lot to ask out of a 19-year-old kid. Is he going to be David Robinson with a jump shot? I guess he could be. I'm going to temper my expectations, not because so much about him, but just the nature of being a first-round pick in the NBA. It's a crapshoot, man. It's a 50-50 proposition.
But I think that's what we need to keep in mind. But all we're hearing, even in a piece that is somewhat critical of him, talking about his defensive effort and how maybe the floor is more realistic than the ceiling, there, even in a critical piece like that, that still raves about how good he could be. And all I'm starting to think about now is all of these people keep adding on about how great he's going to be, what his comparison to former NBA greats is going to be. And the more and more this piles up, the less likely he's actually going to be able to live up to that.
The guy who wrote the article, his name is Rob Douster. He was on with Bickley and Murata today, and he wrote this for ProBasketball.com. And it's a great lengthy kind of scouting report on Ayton. As a guest today on Bickley and Murata's show, he said, look, Ayton can be a Hall of Famer at center. Does he want to play center?
I never got this officially confirmed by anyone at Arizona, but I believe that part of the reason they played those two big is because there was some kind of deal in place where they basically said to Ayton, look, if you come here, we'll let you play the four. You don't have to play the five. We'll let you be a forward here. So that is the complicating factor in all of this, is that the best role that he has at the NBA level, is that something that he's going to be willing to play? And I think he will, because someone's going to get to drive home the point to him where you can be an NBA superstar. You could be, you know, I don't think it's out of the question to say that he could end up being a Hall of Fame caliber player if it all comes together for him. But the only way that happens is if he plays
now,
the five.
Now, keep in mind, Ayton has never said on the record that he doesn't want to play the five. Ayton has never that's nothing but kind of whispers.
No one at U of A
suggestion.
Has gone out on record and said that.
No, what people are kind of basing that off of, frankly, is the defensive intensity in which he played at U of A when he was playing center or when he was being asked to guard bigs. That he just didn't seem particularly interested in doing some of that. And if he is going to hit his ceiling, then he's got to be intense about that. The want to's got to be there. He's got to be driven to be good at it on that end of the floor too. And I think that's what Doster is questioning is, man, if this is somebody who viewed himself as a four, not a five in college, how intensely driven is he going to be to play the center position and defend the center position at this level? Because if he is, well, then you're talking about a potential Hall of Famer. But that's where he leaves open that doubt. And again, he's not saying that he's going to hit his floor, just that there is a higher than you would think chance he's closer to his floor than he is the ceiling. In other words, if there was a 10% chance he's more his floor than he is his ceiling, because of this, there might be a 15% chance he hits his floor and not his ceiling.
Well, but if you pay attention to NBA draft history, of course there is that. I mean, there is this weird thing that happens at the top of the draft where it's almost a 50-50 between the top four or five picks. Some are easily going to bust, and some are actually going to have legitimate NBA careers. Now, all of this being said, though, really makes me think that we're starting to get to that point where we're overanalyzing this already, you know? And that was something that Ryan McDonough even said earlier today after the player workout.
Yeah, that happens every year. And you know, we need to be mindful of that and critical of it. You know, you can almost get too much exposure sometimes. And, you know, when you go game by game, possession by possession, you know, everybody's going to look good and bad, right? You know, when you see the highlight tapes or the low light tapes, you know, you can kind of make those however you want to make them, depending on your agenda, if you're, you know, at all biased about it. So, you know, we're keeping that in mind and we're trying to guard against that. I think historically that also happens with older college players, 3 and 4 year college players that you've seen them for so long, maybe a little bit fatigued and pick apart their game as opposed to a, you know, freshman who's new and fresh and you haven't seen as much. So, you know, we're keeping that in mind and that's where we're doing our own edits of, you know, strengths, weaknesses and seeing how guys handle different situations and really every facet of the game.
And for the record, and that's a great soundbite. For the record, I'm not worried about DeAndre Ayton understanding that when he gets to this level, he's going to have to be a center.
Or play defense.
I'm a little worried about the defensive part, just because we've never seen that part of his game. I mean...
But we saw, what, a sample size of 26, 28 games?
I know, but somewhere in there, we should have seen a little bit more of a commitment to play defense than we did. So I am a little worried about the intensity that he's going to play defense and that level at the NBA. I'm not worried about, hey, when he sits down with the Suns, we think you're a center in this league. No, I'm not. I'm a power forward. That's not how it's going to go down. You think I'm a center? You're going to make me the number one pick? I'm going to be your center, and I'm going to play center for you. I just hope that for game 65 of an NBA season, is he playing the center position with the defensive intensity that is required out of a center in this league? I am worried about that a little bit.
Yeah,
I am.
I understand your point, but go around the rest of the NBA. Game 65, how many other NBA veterans are giving 100% defensive effort?
Fair.
So, I mean, it's...
How many NBA veterans have the chance to hit a ceiling as high as DeAndre Ayton does?
I understand
that's what
that
separates the greats.
But this criticism about DeAndre Ayton's defense, it makes it sound like everyone who currently plays in the NBA is a ace defender.
Is giving it all every single night.
I mean, we're talking about a 19-year-old kid who has 1 year of college tape right now.
Yep.
Yes, he may have some lacking of effort in his defensive game as of now, but as a young man, I have no doubt that that can be worked out of him and he can turn into this future Hall of Famer that everyone's preaching about.
But I think Ryan is absolutely right, and I think it was a very intuitive thing of him to say in that at some point you just kind of have to stop.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we've seen all the tape. We've done all the interviews.
It's the same thing with Josh Rosen. Think about all of the things that started to get picked apart about his game leading up to the NFL draft. His religion. A Browns coach at the airport talking to a UCLA volleyball coach.
Right,
I mean,
right.
The longer that we have between the end of the season or knowing the draft order and actually having the draft, the more we're going to get these people nitpicking.
And at some point, it just benefits everybody to stop and not over-prep for this, not overthink it, as Gambo would say if he were sitting here with us today. The Positive Impact Awards presented by Zip Sports Grill and Goldie Sports Cafe is coming to Talking Stick Resort Arena on Monday, June 11th. It's a special luncheon featuring Herm Edwards of ASU and former U of A football coach Dick Tomey. It's going to honor 10 high school student-athletes who will be awarded with college scholarships. Go to the rewards page at arizonasports.com for your chance to win tickets to this event, which is sold out. When we come back, Jordan Bird filling in for Gambo on the Burns and Gambo Show. We go out to Oakland, check in with D-backs broadcaster Mike Farron, and find out what he personally has done to break this losing streak for the Arizona Diamondbacks. That's next here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo talk Diamondbacks baseball with a D-backs broadcaster. The Booth is powered by M-Drive, a Phoenix-based company supporting the home team. So support the home team and visit trymdrive.com today.
It's a fact check. I'm back. You back. We back.
Every Friday, we get the opportunity to catch up with the Diamondbacks broadcaster. Tonight, the Diamondbacks taking on the Oakland A's, the first of three from Oakland. And joining us right now, our good friend, Mike Farron, here on the Burns and Gambo Show. Jordan Bird filling in for Gambo today. And with the news that Archie Bradley has shaved his head, what have you shaved, Mike?
I can't talk about that on the radio, Dave.
See, but that's real team spirit there. He's a part of it, but he can't divulge the secrets.
I mean, this is the problem, is I'm like Alex Avila when it comes to back hair. So, like, when if I were to shave it, it would just grow back right away. Like, I'd have 5 o'clock back.
Richer, thicker, fuller.
Yeah, on second thought, really, if I could go back in time 30 seconds, I would not ask you that question because I did
knew
not.
You were playing with fire if you went down that road.
I did not need to know that at all. Not one bit, but thank you for sharing with everybody what you have going on there.
My pleasure.
So what, you've been around the team for this entire road trip now. You've been calling the games. I don't want to ask you something as trite as how is the mood, but I'm going to anyway. How is the mood right now? Because things are rough. What is it like around these guys every day?
Yeah, you know, so like they're really frustrated, obviously. I mean, this has been, you know, almost unprecedented. I mean, even we were just talking to Mike Hazen, and he's like, listen, every team goes through ebbs and flows. He goes, granted, not many teams go through something like we're going through right now. That's not something that happens very often, where you score 26 runs in 14 games when you're, you know, a team that had a sizable lead in the division. But I think that they're handling it pretty well, all things considered. I mean, I realize this may sound weird, but they're pretty positive about the fact that they feel like they're going to get back on track. You know, I think even though you have a number of role players that are being forced into extra duty because of so many injuries, that those guys are not performing to the backs of their baseball card, and I think they feel like they're capable of doing that. So you know, it's a frustrated team. They're disappointed with the way that they've played, but they really have not. I don't feel like they've gotten very down as of yet. They feel like they're going to snap out of it. And I think Archie's comments the other day, you know, I guess it was on Saturday after the loss in New York, pretty much sums up the mood that the team has had all along.
In terms of the offense, with so much of this team under Mike Hazen and Torrey Lovello being on the analytical side, does that play a detriment at a time like this where you might be overthinking what is wrong and maybe pouring over stuff too much as opposed to just trying to wipe the slate clean and let them go out and play?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think the analytics has anything to do with that. I think that that's human nature, right? I mean, I think that's, you know, if anything, guys, listen, you think about it in real life, right? If you're struggling or if things aren't going right at your job, you're trying to push to try and make things better. And sometimes you put extra pressure on yourself. You may not be sleeping well. You know, you may,
sure.
You may try and force a decision that, you know, compounds problems. And I don't think to blame the analytics or to blame, you know, the approach or the mechanisms that they do deals with the human nature of, you know, what teams go through. I mean, that's the fact is that every team goes through offensive downturns. Now, then maybe not quite to the same degree that this team has over the course of the last 2 weeks, but it happens over the course of a year, and it's just a matter of how you stay the course and come out of it. And I do think it's helped that, you know, you wake up this morning and this team has, you know, not played well offensively for 2 weeks, and yet they're still only a half game out of first place. And I mean, I think it speaks to the fact that the division, nobody has really come and run away with it. They may have let teams back into the race, but they haven't, you know, lost out on it.
Yeah, and that's kind of – we were talking about that yesterday, and I mean, yes, they lost their cushy lead, and yeah, it's that they're not in first place anymore, but everything that they've lost, they can get back. I mean, they haven't lost anything that can't be reacquired over time, so it's bad. And I don't want to paint a picture that it's not bad, but I also don't want to paint a picture that it's over or it's done or they're doomed or anything like that. Everything they've lost, they can reacquire over the next several months if they want to.
Absolutely, and I think that's, you know, it's wrong to have a funeral for them at this point. I mean, that's the, you know, the other point of this is, well, tonight is what, game 50, right? So there's 100 and... I'm not good at math, guys. It's 113 of these to go, right? We're not even a third of the way through the season, so there's still a long way to go, and a lot can happen. I mean, as my favorite line from Earl Weaver was always, this ain't football. We do it every day.
Taking a look at tonight's lineup. Now, obviously, it's an American League ballpark. You have the adage of the designated hitter, and something that Torrey Lovello mentioned earlier in the week was maybe the idea of getting more opportunities for John Ryan Murphy. It comes in the form of tonight as the designated hitter, but were you at all surprised to see him batting third in Lovello's lineup tonight?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and we talked with Torrey about it on the Coors Light BP show. You'll hear that in a little while, in just about an hour. You'll hear what Torrey had to say about it. I mean, I was surprised. But, I mean, I think when you look at how few guys have had good months offensively, I mean, your options were like, you know, Daniel Descalso or John Ryan Murphy, you know, to kind of hit in that spot, or Ketel Marte. And you know, I think Marte is still kind of rounding into shape in the second half of the lineup. And I think, you know, Murphy has swung the bat very well. I mean, he's homered in each of his starts on this road trip. And you know, I think he's, even though he doesn't, you know, walk a ton, he puts together pretty good at bats. So I think when you kind of start to look at the way things have gone lately, there is a little bit of riding the hot hand, and I realize that there can be danger in that as well, but what the heck, when you're scoring three runs a game, you got to try and do something different, right?
I mean,
the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results.
I always find Mike Farron joining us here on the Burns and Gambo show, D-backs broadcaster, with the pregame show and occasionally play-by-play, I always find you to be a very thoughtful, knowledgeable, intuitive baseball guy. Do you have a theory as to why things have become so bad offensively for the Diamondbacks these last couple of weeks? I mean, we've seen, you know, Jordan asked you a second ago about maybe they're too much information and they're cramming too much data into their heads. The tunneling, not being able to hit the fastball. I mean, we've seen all of the results. Do you have a theory as to the cause?
I mean, I think generally when big league hitters can't hit a fastball, it's timing. I mean, that's usually what it is. So that's what I've been on, and I think you've seen it. You know, I noticed it probably towards the middle of April with Chris Owings. I think we've seen it with Paul Goldschmidt for most of the year. They just have not been on time on velocity, and that's the biggest thing. The other one is, and this is going to come across as making an excuse, and maybe it is. I did have somebody tell me once, he says, you know, everybody talks about how injuries are, you know, nobody can use that as an excuse. They're literally the best excuse, right? I mean, you have a lot of guys who were expected to be role players on this team that are having to take on a bigger chunk of the performance, and I think that probably adds into some of it as well. So I think, you know, you look at those things, to me that matters more than, you know, what their approach was. Because the thing is that this approach worked really well in April, right? They were down in the bottom third of the league in batting average, but they had a 10% walk rate, and they were creating a lot of run scoring opportunities, even though it wasn't a high octane offense. So, you know, right now they haven't been getting on base as much. They have been striking out more. They've been making some poor decisions in the strike zone. Maybe it's pressing. Maybe it's just the way they've been pitched. Maybe they have been slower to make adjustments. And at some point they're going to adjust, and hopefully that starts tonight. They got a tough guy to do it against in Manaea, but You know, you're also starting to get to a part in the schedule where you feel like you should be able to take advantage of some of these teams that you're playing. If you don't, it's gonna be real rough. But now you really start to feel like you're starting to come out of it once you get home on this next road trip. Because Oakland's a pretty good team, especially offensively.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's the you know, once you get home, you start seeing the Cincinnati's, the Miami's of the world. You really feel like you need to take that next step forward.
All right. So Archie Bradley shaved his head. We had Clay Buchholz on the show earlier. We heard it wasn't the full on Bic and shaving cream shaved head, that it was just like the clippers at the lowest setting. Yeah, no, he's not Steve Gilbert.
In more ways than one.
Indeed. As anybody we're referring to the Q-headed beat writer from MLB.com, who does slightly resemble a cue ball on the pool table.
Like Telly Savalas's.
Oh, yeah, like all he needs is a lollipop and he's good to go. Has anybody else done anything drastic physically to their appearance to try to shake this?
Not that I can see, but I haven't really been going through checking to see what's been shaved.
Who
thought that the Diamondback season would lead to the point where Mike Farron would have a sentence like that? I haven't checked on who has recently shaved.
And yet here we are.
You know what? It's a long season, and sometimes these things happen. Mike, we enjoy. You have the call tonight? Are you back on the call tonight?
I do. It's me and Tom. We are busily preparing for tonight's broadcast, where you'll hear from Mike Hazen on the Coors Light BP show, and you'll hear from Torrey Lovello.
Okay, looking forward to that coming up at 6 o'clock. Thanks, Mike. We appreciate it.
Anytime, guys. Take care.
You got Mike Farron joining us here, our In the Booth segment, the Diamondbacks, typical pre- and post-game show host, but he also does a really good job filling in for Greg Schulte, and he'll be filling in for Greg tonight with the call, the first of the three from Oakland.
What are your thoughts just going into this weekend? I mean, is this the series that we break out, or are we still talking about this next week of what's wrong with the Diamondbacks? Their losing streak is now at X amount of games.
They'll win a game.
That's a huge achievement.
No, at this point. I know. I know that. I know how that sounded. They will end the losing streak at some point during this series, and I have a feeling there will be at least a game where they break out offensively.
You're playing the odds.
At some point, it has to happen. That this cannot continue. The statistics, the odds, the law of averages say it will not. I think one game this weekend, they'll win at least one, and one game this weekend, offensively, they will break out.
But that's still what is so crazy about this team, and what about the National League West? They're a half game out.
Yeah.
After all of the trials and tribulations over the last month, they're only a half game out.
Yep. Nothing has been lost that cannot be regained. Nothing. The quarterback whisperer talked about his old team's rookie quarterback. What does BA have to say about Josh Rosen? If you missed it, you'll hear it next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo talk Diamondbacks baseball with a D-backs broadcaster. The Booth is powered by M-Drive, a Phoenix-based company supporting the home team. So support the home team and visit trymdrive.com today.
It's a fact check. I back you back. We back the D-backs.
Doug and Wolf.
God bless our troops. We want to thank all the veterans, past and present, that have served this country and sacrificed for us.
As we honor and celebrate their service, Wolf, have a great Memorial Day weekend, everyone. The Doug and Wolf Show back at you on Tuesday on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
We got the remix edition.
Listen closely to the tune. Turn it up for me, Andy. Who on God's green earth covered Careless Whisper like this?
Seether.
Seether?
Seether covered Careless Whisper.
It takes the best part out of the song, which is the saxophone.
True.
I mean, that is the best part about that's what makes no, that song no, no, recognizable. No.
George Michael's golden tones are the best part of Careless Whisper.
You know, Wham is one of those songs or one of those bands that you're not proud to admit that you enjoy. But if I'm driving around and Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go comes on,
all right,
I might be singing along.
It's funny that you say that because you know, I don't have a Spotify account like Gambo does, but I do have like 2,000 songs, 3,000 songs that I've purchased over time or ripped off of CDs that are on my iPhone. There is one song that when it comes up on, like, I'm playing random songs, and when it comes up, I call it my guilty pleasure song, that I just love it. It's Freedom by George Michael.
Oh man. Post-Wham.
I turn that up loud, and I sing along to that, and I every time I do, I think someone in the car next to me is going to think, what is that guy listening to? You know what I'm listening to? I'm listening to Freedom by George Michael. It is the guilty pleasure song of my music library. Oh, here we go.
You got no argument from there for me, because with my age group, what I remember about this song was the music video.
Well, sure, Cindy Crawford,
this has a special place in a young Jordan Bird's heart.
All those models just writhing around wearing next to nothing.
Yeah.
Sure, absolutely. Don't tempt me. This song is just too good. We gotta get on to what we're talking about here.
I could talk Wham all day.
I'm good. You know what? I'm gonna Spotify this. Yeah. I'm going to Spotify. I love this song. I'm going to Spotify this. I'm going to add this to my Spotify. The reason we played Careless Whisper is for the quarterback whisperer, Bruce Arians, who this morning was on the Doug and Wolf show and, as you expect, had plenty to say and was asked plenty of questions about Josh Rosen, the new rookie quarterback for the Arizona Cardinals, including adding his voice to the symphony of voices who have told us that Josh Rosen is the most NFL ready quarterback in this draft.
Oh, I think he's probably the most ready guy in the draft. You know, he played in a really good offense. He's a bright guy. You know, I would say, hey, just let your football do the talking and just blend in.
Which is so funny because Bruce Arians himself is not a let the football do the talking and blend in kind of guy.
I think in a sense he's not, but I do think when you look back at a lot of his trash talk over the years, the thing that always comes to my mind is his little feud with Jeff Fisher and the Rams, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of did both. He trash talked, but also let the football back up the trash talk. It wasn't just trash talk out of nowhere or poking the bear of a team that was better than you or beating you. The Cardinals under Bruce Arians during that time frame, for the most part, had the Rams' number.
Yeah, but it went beyond just trash talking with the Rams.
True.
I mean, it was calling DJ Humphries knee deep. It was.
But once again, was that false?
No, it wasn't.
Was DJ Humphries ready to play at that time?
It wasn't false, but it was part of BA's personality.
Charm.
Just sort of the, you know, no risk it, no biscuit, his charm, let it fly, say whatever you want to say sort of thing. Bruce was never about, you know, letting the football do the talking. Bruce did plenty of talking that went beyond the football, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I understand what you're saying. He backed it up with results. He is the winningest coach in the history of the Arizona Cardinals organization. He obviously backed it up with a lot of football, but he liked to talk it too, whether he was talking about his own guys.
Absolutely.
Or whether he was talking about other teams. He always had plenty to say. And blending in, that ain't a Bruce Arians thing either. It's the advice he's giving to Josh Rosen is interesting because it's not really the advice that Bruce himself would follow, and I find that kind of funny.
So what do you think is the difference here? For a guy who has a well-established history of not blending in and being outspoken, yet is having, I wouldn't say an issue, but is bringing up the way Rosen is, there just seems to be a disconnect there.
I think it comes with experience. I think it comes with, you know, I've done it before. I've been in this league a long time, where Josh Rosen, you know, the ink is still drying on his first contract ever. Mm. I that'd be my guess.
Yeah.
Is that you, that maybe be,
I would need to see
like
you on kinda, an NFL field,
right,
first of all.
You have to earn that, I think, to a certain extent, and maybe to a certain extent that he does. I heard that, and all I could think about was what life would be like for Josh Rosen and how different things would be if BA were still the coach.
Well, take it even beyond Rosen. If all of the situation this offseason played out exactly the same, but Bruce Arians was still coach, I would be fascinated to see what he would do with Sam Bradford. And would he be able to squeeze more life out of Bradford than we think and maybe push off the emergence of Josh Rosen
based off of the performance of Sam Bradford.
Maybe, but only if BA developed the ability like Mr. Miyagi to clap his hands.
And keep him healthy.
Yeah. And put the hands on the knee and keep him healthy. But,
okay, and then that goes to another point. BA, we've talked about this entire offseason of having a fullback, of having a built-up offensive line to protect Bradford. BA wasn't concerned with that kind of stuff.
And you know what? That brings up a really good point, too. I mean, BA was never about extra tight ends and chipping and things like that. Helping out the offensive line and protecting your quarterback a little bit. I mean, it's not in his nature. Well, with a quarterback like Sam Bradford, you almost have to, right?
Maybe Rosen would have been forced into action.
Maybe. Or maybe it would have been Glennon more who would have been, because Bruce typically didn't embrace rookies playing right away.
Well, and that's the other thing that he said this morning on Doug and Wolf that I found interesting, was the idea that under Bruce Arians, there was the two-field system, especially in OTAs. And under Bruce Arians, Rosen more than likely would have been on the opposite field and not even with this opportunity.
Well, yeah, that's the opportunity. He's gotten the opportunity that a lot of rookies don't get. You know, we used to practice on both fields so that we could see everybody. But, I mean, with him getting first-team reps, with Sam sitting out, that's his opportunity to show that he can beat him out.
Yeah, an opportunity that he might not have gotten, you know, or at least not right away. I still think, and I do really believe this, that Bruce Arians would have been good for Josh Rosen given BA's experience with quarterbacks. But I also think that given BA's temperament and personality, I don't know if it would have brought out the best in Josh Rosen as soon as it might with Mike McCoy or more of a defensive-minded head coach in Steve Wilks.
We'll never know. But another facet of this that we're not even thinking is Bruce Arians is doing this all with the knowledge now of being an analyst, not being tied to a team. If he was through the pre-draft process where he was actually being able to sit down with Josh Rosen and ask him questions that might be on his mind, maybe he would have a better understanding of Rosen. Because on face value, before this sound today, I would have thought Bruce Arians would have loved a guy like Josh Rosen. A guy who has all the tools, apparently, and has the swagger that Bruce Arians has.
Yeah, and but being that they're so similar, they might have been too similar. You know, in that it might have been a challenge to overcome at first. With that in mind, let's drop a little knowledge on you here on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Boys and girls, what did we learn from Burns and Gambo today?
It's the Knowledge Drop, brought to you by the Shane Company.
We learned that when Bruce Arians was on the Doug and Wolf Show today, he was preparing for his Memorial Day weekend.
So are you still in the grocery store right now?
Yes, I'm in the wine section right now, Wolf.
Nice! Nice! All right, is it going to be red or white this weekend?
I think it's going to be a combo. Definitely a combo weekend.
Now listen,
and a few beers too.
I bet, babe, no doubt about it.
Nothing wrong with that.
I feel like the chill zone's going to be in full effect this Memorial Day weekend.
Nothing wrong with that. Oh,
see, I mean, like again, I'm not proud to admit it, but this song is catchy, and you'll be bopping around. Once again, not proud of it. But I'm a closeted Wham fan.
I am not a fan of this song. I could never hear this song again and I'd be just fine. Careless Whisper, I'm cool with. George Michael, your fade. Or, well, go ahead, crank this up here. Give it.
I'm checking to make sure your toe is not tapping.
My toe is not tapping. Okay. No. This song is not a guilty pleasure on my iPhone. But it's good to know it is for you. I know your weak spot now.
Yeah.
I know your weak spot.
And it's all George Michael.
The Diamondbacks are in Oakland hoping the DH will break their losing streak. We'll preview tonight's game coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show with Jordan Bird filling in.
Home of Arizona Diamondbacks baseball is 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. We're checking in on the Diamondbacks as they warm up for the game's first pitch. D-backs on deck, presented by Cox. Get Cox high-speed internet for $29.99 a month for 12 months and ask about panoramic Wi-Fi. Learn more at cox.com.
D-backs on deck. We got Diamondbacks baseball coming up within an hour from now. 6:35 first pitch. Diamondbacks taking on the Oakland A's as the 7-game losing streak, 13 of 14 they've lost, hopefully comes to an end at some point this weekend, and hopefully it comes to an end at some point tonight. This is D-backs on deck. Dave Burns, Jordan Bird, filling in for Gambo today, getting you ready for tonight's game that includes our pitching matchup tonight. Brought to you by the Berg Simpson Law Firm. When the game is on the line and you've been injured, nobody matches up to Berg Simpson. Visit BergSimpson.com. That's BURGSimpson.com. Tonight's matchup for the Diamondbacks, the lefty Patrick Corbin. 4-1, 2.60 ERA. He gets the start for the Diamondbacks. Sean Manaea goes for Oakland. He's 5-4 with a 2.71 ERA. He's got a no-hitter to his credit this season for the Oakland A's.
Yeah, this is a quality pitching matchup tonight. Two guys who potentially could be all-stars in their respected leagues. Now, the one thing, though, that's interesting about my Manaea is he's very similar to the Diamondbacks. Strong March, April, May, not so much. In March and April, 6 runs he gave up in only 6 starts. Since then, he's given up 12 runs in 4 starts in the month of May. So even though he's had pretty decent numbers this season, the Diamondbacks might be catching him at the right time.
Yeah, he has struggled a little bit, to say the least. His last time out against the Toronto Blue Jays, he only lasted 5 innings. He gave up 4 earned runs, 5 hits the time before that against Boston. He got the win, gave up 3 earned runs, 4 total in 6 innings. Patrick Corbin coming off a start against the New York Mets, 5 1/3, 4 hits, 2 earned runs. He walked 4. He struck out 6. Velocity continues to be a concern for Patrick Corbin and those around the Arizona Diamondbacks. He hasn't quite rediscovered it. And if you look at his last few starts, hasn't gotten very deep into games. It's been quietly, I mean, not certainly statistically not an embarrassment by any stretch, a 2.60 ERA. But if you watch these games, you can just tell the magic isn't quite the same as it was early in the season for Patrick Corbin, whether it's slider location, whether it's fastball velocity. It just hasn't quite been the same dominance that we saw out of him early on.
Yeah, the benefit, though, is because he was so good at the beginning part of the season that even though he's had a slight tick down, it still has been pretty decent baseball for him. So let's be real with these two pitchers. This has the potential to be another 3-2 game.
Yeah, no, it does. I mean, especially when you're talking about a lefty as good as Manaea, who is pitched as well, at least early on in the season, as he has. Of course, this at this point is all about the Arizona Diamondbacks and how they're going to break out of this funk. As I've mentioned, they've lost 13 of their last 14 games. Keep in mind, this was a team that at one point was 24-11. And is now 25-24. Still only a half game out of first in a National League West division that is wide open. The struggles offensively, we all know about them by now. Over these last 14 games, in which they've won only one, they're hitting as a team 174. They're averaging 1.9 runs per game. And you brought up something interesting when we were talking with Mike Farron, and I know Dan Bickley was talking about it earlier today too, here on the station, about too much information. And is, you know, we understand the game of baseball has evolved into something more analytical, more statistical oriented. Are the Diamondbacks hitters being presented with too much information? And is that information overwhelming them and kind of clogging up the plumbing, so to speak?
Mike Farron didn't seem to think that was the case, but I think it's a legitimate question to ask with a team that has been so analytical. I mean, how many times this year has Torey Lovello come on this show and talked about the reason he did this or the reason he did that was because those were the probabilities and those were the numbers? Maybe it's not at the forefront of their mind, but I think subconsciously there has to be this thing where if you're getting inundated with data and analysis, there is a natural human reaction to overthink it.
Yeah, I can't relate it to much outside of what I do for a living, what we do for a living here on the station. I do know that getting ready for a 4-hour radio show, there are times where you can just over prep. There are times
Absolutely.
Where you can just, you know, oh, I got to read one more story. I've got to go to one more web page. I've got to get one more stat. And at some point, you just kind of have to say, enough, stop. My the The data bank is full. I can't cram anything else in there. I'm good. I just have to take a break. I don't know if that's what the cause of this is. I do know the Diamondbacks are doing something interesting to try to break out of it tonight, breaking out a lineup that is a little different looking. Not a lot, but a little. The big one is the designated hitter tonight is John Ryan Murphy, and he's hitting third in tonight's lineup.
I'll be curious because this was the guy that I think a lot of Diamondback fans were looking at as one of the under-the-radar solutions to breaking the Diamondbacks out of the slump, specifically not in the DH spot but in the catcher role. With the way Alex Avila has been contributing at the plate, you looked at John Ryan Murphy, and Lovello even said that you're going to see more opportunities. Now he has a pretty grand stage to see if he can actually contribute.
Our injury report for tonight's game, nothing new on the front when it comes to the Arizona Diamondbacks, with the exception of Shelby Miller, who was on this morning on the Doug and Wolf show and said that he feels like he is getting close and could be ready to return to the Diamondbacks rotation sometime within a month or so. A minor league rehab stint would appear to be on the docket for him next, sometime very soon. He could be back in this Diamondbacks rotation sometime in the next 3 or 4 weeks.
And that's exciting because even though pitching hasn't necessarily been the number one issue this year, if you can add another strong arm and maybe move a guy like Matt Cook to the bullpen to help out with some of the issues there, then that's the best of both worlds.
Let's give you the keys to tonight's game the way we see it.
Listen, man, I'm a huge key master.
I am the key master.
D-backs Keys to the Game, brought to you by your Valley Chevy dealers, the most awarded and fastest growing brand 4 years in a row. Find your Chevy today. Visit valleychevy.com.
Key to tonight's game, do better than hitting .174 as you've done in your last 14 games and ride the freshly shaved Archie Bradley to victory tonight.
It's a brave new world we're living in.
He didn't shave the beard, he shaved the head. See how that looks tonight. Quick from the NBA, what happened right there? Kevin Love heads to the locker room after colliding with Jason Tatum.
Yeah, he's in the locker room, out for game six right now.
Diamondbacks baseball is next. We're back with you Tuesday at 2 o'clock here on the Burns and Gambo Show. Have a good night, everybody.